So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Ron Kaufman, Chairman of Up Your Service. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Adrian.
So, Ron, thank you for your time today. I mean, but for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and also a little bit about the work that you do?
Sure. I was born and raised in the United States, but I've been living in the country of Singapore for the past 25 years. I spend most of my life on airplanes traveling around the world. I did 121 flights last year to just about every continent and working with different clients in government and commercial industry sectors, doing speeches, workshops, seminars, and launching dramatic service improvement programs.
Okay.
The work that we do has two fundamental goals. One is to help companies quickly and dramatically improve their service.
Uh-huh.
And the second is to help those organizations build an enduring, what we call a culture of uplifting service.
Okay.
So that the quality of service inside the organization is every bit as good as the service we want customers to experience outside the organization.
Fantastic. And now, to underpin all of that, I guess, or actually to help a lot of that, you wrote a New York Times, a couple of years ago, you wrote a New York Times best-selling book called Uplifting Service, The Proven Path to Delighting Your Customers, Colleagues, and Everyone Else You Meet. Can you tell me a little bit about the book and how it came about? And also, I mean, I always ask authors this, but most importantly, why you wrote it?
It's a great question. I am not an academic. I'm much more of a practitioner.
Hallelujah.
So over the 25 years of working in this field, what I've always been looking for is what works, what doesn't, and what frustrates leaders today.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is that there are some organizations who have very successfully cracked the code on service.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, Singapore Airlines or Changi Airport here in Singapore, or the Ritz-Carlton Hotel or Starbucks on a global basis,
uh-huh.
or Amazon.com or Zappos today online.
Yeah.
There are companies in various industries who have figured out how to build a strong and enduring culture of service so that it's in their DNA. And what I did was I looked at what are all of those different companies doing in common?
Right.
What is the framework that they're using? Is there an architecture? Is there a methodology that could be explained to others? And I found it. And
okay.
So in the book, Uplifting Service, it's called The Proven Path to Delighting Your Customers, Colleagues, and Everyone Else You Meet. Because when you apply the steps in that path, you don't just produce better customer service, you actually produce service as a differentiator for the whole organization.
Wow, fantastic. That's interesting. But in the book, you also talk about how companies spend millions of pounds and dollars and euros and all sorts of different other currencies every year on customer service training. But most of it is just not working. I mean, we could just turn the tap on and just let it go down the drain. I mean, I think that's my experience as well, and a lot of training doesn't work. It's very formulaic. I mean, why do you think companies keep doing that? What is the problem with this, the commissioning of training or the designing or the delivery of kind of training?
Right. Well, the fundamental is the word training. That's the problem.
Okay.
There's a difference between training someone and educating someone. You train someone what to do in a certain situation, in a certain way, where it's very important that they do it right. You give them a script, you give them a procedure, you give them a checklist, and then you test them to make sure that they've been properly trained, like a pilot in the simulator.
Right.
Or somebody working with a sharp knife,
right.
Or somebody who's working with fire. I want them to be well trained. But in a service environment, we need people who can be more flexible, more responsive, more proactive, more personal. And that means you need to be able to think better about what does it actually mean to serve another person, and then be able to apply certain fundamental principles, but use your own creative ability to figure out how to apply those principles in this situation, which is different than that situation, which is different than a third situation.
Right.
And you can only do that by educating people, teaching them to understand and think differently about service. So customer service training focuses on the mechanics. Customer service, or what we call actionable service education, focuses not just on the mechanics, but on the meaning of service. The
right.
Purpose of doing these actions.
So you're actually training in majority is training people, is telling people what to do rather than actually training them how to think.
Right.
Okay, excellent. So, I mean, If you are an organization and they're thinking about improving their service and their overall sort of experience, I mean, and then there's one of the challenges for firms is they get stuck in a cycle of, oh well, that's how we've done it and it seems to have worked, and then they keep on that sort of track. But if they decided they wanted to break that cycle and wanted to step out and improve their service, and they wanted to do something different, I mean, that would help them dramatically improve their service, where would you say they should get started? What would you suggest that they should do?
Well, once they've made the decision to improve, really the next step is to get a good, what I call, definition of service. Because if you ask people at the front line, you ask people who are in the back office, you ask people in various departments, what is service, you're going to hear a wide range of different answers. People will sort of be talking about the same thing, but they don't have a fundamental definition. So the definition that we teach is this: service is taking action to create value for someone else. Let's take that apart. Service is taking action. Of course, you have to do something. Mm-hmm. What's the purpose of what you're doing? It's to create a situation that some other person will want, need, hope for, prefer, value, desire, something that somebody else will value. Now, with that definition, service is taking action to create value for someone else, everyone at work is a service provider.
Yes.
There's no such thing as somebody saying, well, no, I'm not in service, I'm a professional. Yes. What's the purpose of your profession? What's the purpose of your checklist? What's the purpose of your procedure? It's all to create value for other people. And the most important part of that definition, Adrian, is not the action that you take. It's how well you understand the someone else that you're taking the action for, so that you can figure out what they value, which then leads you to the action that you need to take.
But Ron, a lot of people might kind of be listening to this and go, yeah, and I get that, and they're nodding their heads. And then there's the accountants, and then there's the people who work for accountants and everybody else, the operational guys go, well, how do you measure all of that?
There are various ways to measure service improvement. You can do the lagging indicators of profitability, top line, bottom line, shareholder value, etc. You can do the also lagging indicators of survey results, mm-hmm. so things like customer satisfaction scores, net promoter score, wallet allocation score. But then you can also look at things that are more leading, like compliments, number of compliments that are coming in. And then where we want people to focus is on what we call the leading indicator of a stronger service culture. Because how do you actually get a compliment? You have to do something different, something better, something new that you don't normally do,
right.
Something better than expected. Mm-hmm. And that's what causes somebody else to say, hey, I got to give you a compliment for that. So when people are saying, is the service culture getting stronger, we try to get them away from focusing on the lagging indicators of satisfaction metrics and focus on the leading indicators of new service ideas and service actions.
Right. I mean, I think you said a really important kind of word there, a couple of words. You said you talk about the service culture. I mean, it seems that it has to be, this is not a training exercise or an education exercise. This is a culture exercise. This is about understanding, what do we stand for? What do we value? What's important to us? Who do we care about? Why do we care about them? You know, and all of those different sort of like things. So you can't really train that. You've almost got to go back to first principles. Like, why are we here? Is that right?
Well, Adrian, you know, all the questions that you ask are excellent, and they will give you a sense of, you know, what kind of culture do we want. But what I wrote about in the book is that you can actually engineer the development of that culture. There is a fundamental architecture that can be applied that involves not only service education, but proper rules of service leadership, and then what we call the 12 building blocks of service culture.
Right.
So, for example, building up a common service language,
okay.
recruiting the right people into the organization, and when you recruit them, giving them an outstanding orientation experience so that their first impression of the company is the one you really want it to be.
Right.
Having your recognition programs in place, your communications programs in place, your service recovery programs in place, your voice of the customer capture, your service metrics, your service benchmarking. In other words, there's a lot of very practical things that people can do to what we call engineer the development of a service culture. So it's not just feel good, it's actually do the right things to produce a culture that is good.
So that sort of actions speak louder than words sort of idea.
Absolutely.
Okay, excellent. I mean, but in the bit you're also going to talk around, I mean, this is not, as you say, right at the beginning of the interview or our conversation, you talk about saying, I'm not an academic, I'm a real sort of practical, pragmatic sort of guy. And you share a number of examples in the book of firms that are responding really well to some of these challenges. And you mentioned some of them earlier on. Can you give us a couple of examples of some firms, and hopefully not the usual suspects, that are responding well to some of the challenges, like around having to be more speedy and transparent and genuine and authentic and all those different sort of like challenges?
Sure. Let me give you two examples. One is an Indian technology company called Wipro. Wipro's got 130,000 employees.
Cool.
And they had a reputation for being low cost, for being a vendor, and for meeting the service level agreement.
Right.
Now, the problem with that position is anybody else can come in with a lower cost.
Yes.
There's nothing that really differentiates you in terms of value add.
Mm-hmm.
And they see you as a vendor, not necessarily as a priceless partner for the future.
Right.
So we worked with them, and they came up with what they call their service philosophy, which is to become known as a proactive, value-adding service partner.
Right.
Proactive meaning we make offers, we make suggestions, we make recommendations, we submit proposals. We don't wait to be asked to do that. We think about what our customers need, and we're proactively offering that.
Okay.
Value adding means that when we do get a contract, we're not just trying to meet the terms of the contract. We're looking for what can we do that's above and beyond the terms of the contract, so that the client says, boy, am I glad I went with you. You guys not only did what I hired you to do, but you added more value.
Right.
And that means working with the client as a partner, not as a vendor, where you realize that you're going to be getting involved in shared risk. You're going to be doing things in their favor, counting on the fact that a partner will also want you to be successful in the longer term.
Yeah.
So that's one example in the technology field.
Excellent.
The other example is in the hospitality area, which is a little bit of a usual suspect as far as the industry for service.
Yeah.
But the story is unique. There was a brand based in Mauritius that has resorts in Mauritius, Reunion, the Maldives, China, and the United Arab Emirates. It was called Naiad Resorts, and it was about a 3.5-star brand.
Right.
And they wanted to leapfrog over 4 and get straight to 5-star.
Okay.
But they did not have enough money to refurbish all the properties and bring them up to 5-star standards. So what they did instead is they took things out of the rooms rather than putting more things into the rooms. They added more light, they painted the walls more white, and when guests came in, they said, well, our theme here is less deluxe, but more delight.
Okay.
So now that we've got you here, we are passionately interested in what is it that you like? Is it flowers? We can do that for you every day. Would you like to have an exercise studio in the room? We can bring in some exercise equipment. Are you somebody who likes to do painting? We can bring that in. So in other words, rather than trying to overload every room with every possibility, they stripped it down and then dramatically ramped up the service attention that they were paying to each of the guests. And not only did the guests notice it, but the travel industry noticed it and gave them a 5-star ranking within 2 years. And what that meant was that their occupancy rates went up, their room rates went up, and they earned enough money then to be able to do the complete refurbishing project that they couldn't do just 2 years before.
And I hope they didn't actually start chucking stuff back into the rooms when they got them out of the refurbishment.
Less deluxe, more delight.
Yeah, no, that's great. I like that. That is really, it's very contrary, isn't it?
Yes, lighter and brighter.
Excellent. Now, also going back to the book, I mean, the book was written in sort of like, it was published rather in 2012, so I guess it was probably written over the latter part of 2011.
Yes.
And then published in 2012, and now we're in 2015, and we know how things kind of like, how fast things have changed and changed around. I mean, what's changed since you wrote the book?
Well, there's a lot more recognition of the importance of culture.
Right.
I think this issue around service culture, it's not airy-fairy anymore. You know, a lot of times when people hear the word culture, they go, oh, that's the soft stuff. And then they hear service culture, they go, it's really fair. And that's not the way it is anymore. I think serious business leaders recognize that in industry after industry, because of globalization, because of commoditization, because of the dramatic increase in competitive pressures, to differentiate from anybody else based on product, it's not easy to do that over an extended period of time. you've actually got to differentiate based upon the quality of the experience that you create for the people who are your customers or your clients. And in order to do that consistently, you need to develop the kind of culture that attracts, develops, and retains people who want to be those service providers.
Right.
So the importance of culture, not only for differentiating from your competition, but also for attracting and keeping the best talent.
Okay. And so what should, in the light of all of that and all the changes and the changing environment, all the pressures that firms are under now, is that what would you say that they... What are the top things that you would advising firms to do, to think about, to consider, thinking about kind of where they are now and also like looking to the future?
Yeah, I would say look very seriously at what kind of a place your company is right now for people to come to and work in every day.
Right.
Are people coming because they've got a job, or are they coming because they enjoy coming to work?
Right.
And do everything you can to turn your place of business into a place where people are looking forward to getting to work, where people stay for longer hours because they want to be there to get things done, where they enjoy being with each other, where the culture of the organization is actually uplifting the service provider as well as providing uplifting service to the end customer.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. And some people might be turning around and going and thinking about, well, actually, no, it's, oh, that's, that sounds like employee engagement for things. But I guess if I...
Same.
Yeah, well,
right?
Exactly. But I would also, right. I'd also like to say that it sort of is employee engagement. It's an issue, is a theme, but it's not, because employee engagement is not something you do to people. It's employee engagement is almost a description of kind of what actually happens when you create that environment, I guess.
That's right.
Excellent.
That's right.
So, Ron, is there anything else you'd like to add before I ask you my final question?
Sure. I'd say that one of the tips that any reader or listener can do is become a studious observer of service.
Okay.
Service is all around us. It's in every government function. It's in every commercial function. It's in your personal life. It's in your business life. It's in your community. It's in your neighborhood. It's in your family. It's in your department. It's everywhere you look. People are taking action to create value for other people.
Yeah.
Become an observer of what's working in things that are not just your industry. So when we talk about service benchmarking, we don't mean look at your competition. That's competitive intelligence.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is look at any other service provider and see what is it that they're doing well and what can you learn from that? How can you adopt it or adapt it and then apply it in your own situation?
Excellent. So always be learning. Always be looking.
That's right.
Excellent. So finally, my final question, Ron, and I always ask this to the majority of people that I have on the podcast series, and the question is this: is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Well, thank you. I would dramatically and vigorously encourage, that's the shameless part, encourage your listeners and your readers to visit the website upyourservice.com.
Okay.
It's just like it sounds, upyourservice.com, and you will find a treasure trove of free resources. You'll find hundreds of articles, scores of videos. You'll find the first section of the book is available free for download. There are high resolution colored posters that you can download for free. There are screensavers, PowerPoint presentations. It's really a tremendous resource center where somebody who's casually interested or seriously interested will find either entertainment or very, very deep service education. It's upyourservice.com.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, what I'll do, Ron, is I'll make sure when I write up the notes for this, I get that all linked up and everything else, and make sure people get pointed, both the readers as well as the listeners get pointed in the right sort of direction. But finally, just wanted to say that thank you for sharing your time and your insight and your experience with us. That's been great.
It's an absolute pleasure to be with you, and I admire what you're doing, Adrian. Keep it up.
Thank you, Ron.